to episode 4 of Drivers, Morning Reads, Inside Look into the Golf Industry. I'm David Klein, along with the president of Sports and Leisure Research Group, John Last. John, we have another terrific guest on today's episode, a true driver of the business in every sense, one of the visionaries who has helped to further elevate the iconic Pinehurst Resort into a preeminent place as both a historic world-class championship venue and a unique destination with modern amenities and a broad set of guest services.
Thanks, David. And as the resort's evolution continues to break new ground, I can still recall when you first experienced Pinehurst with me and the rest of our team back for the 2016 back-to-back U.S. Men's and Women's Opens. And the resort has obviously continued to enjoy a real renaissance in the 4 years since then. So I'm really thrilled today to have with us Eric Kuester, Pinehurst Vice President of Marketing and Brand Partnerships. And really to kind of get us started, Eric, welcome in. Tell us a little bit about your career arc. What brought you to your current role at Pinehurst? And tell us a little bit about your overall responsibilities.
Thank you for that generous introduction, David. And John, great to be with you. Honored to be here today. I kind of had this subliminal courtship with Pinehurst. I came down here in 1999 and was somewhat awestruck with the entire area. I was going to school up at North Carolina State University. And I remember driving down Carolina Vista Drive and seeing the Carolina Hotel and that cupola lit up. It was Thursday of the US Open and the place felt alive. And here I was, a 20-year-old, you know, just kind of gullible, not knowing what I was going to do when I grow up. And then I, you know, fast forward a couple of days later, and I'm watching Payne Stewart embrace Phil Mickelson to win that U.S. Open that is forever, etched into our mind. So I had a big impression from that first experience at Pinehurst. So I was fortunate enough to get into a training program upon graduating. And then I worked at the front desk at the Carolina Hotel. And that was a grind. I mean, I was hoping I'd be in a sales or marketing role. But you know, you feel like the world maybe owes you something when you're freshly graduated. But I had to work nights, weekends, holidays. It took about 2 years for me to finally get into the world I wanted to be in, which was revenue generation and client development. And so now I come to work in a dream job. I get to oversee, as you said, John, I get to oversee all of our brand partnerships, all room night generating functions, the marketing strategy. And it is just a kind of a dream come true to actually get paid to do this every single day and to have passion for it.
It's a special place for those of you who have not been there. It's a place that you have to go to more than once. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in today's episode. But I want to talk a little bit about 2020, because this has certainly been a very challenging year for the travel sector as a whole. We've been tracking that, obviously, through our back to normal barometer. I want you to go back and think about those initial conversations, those strategic decisions that you and your team and colleagues needed to grapple with back in March and April as things really began to unravel quickly, and how they've transpired as we look ahead to 21. Tell me a little bit from a marketing perspective about, you know, what you looked at and sure. How you responded to it.
I remember getting a call from our director of corporate sales in March, and the phone call was essentially, we've got a cancellation and it's due to COVID. And that was a harbinger. I mean, that it snowballed from there. And so that's when COVID arrived at Pinehurst, and the ripple effect and the damage financially has been certainly material. We had some tough decisions to make, John, because, you know, as a largest and most historic golf resort in the United States, we don't like to close. And our president, Tom Pashley, took that decision very, very seriously. But no one knew the enormity of COVID back in February, March. And so we were meeting weekly to try to figure out what to do. No one had the answers. It was hard. It is hard to show courage. It was hard to predict what was going to happen in a 24-hour cycle. We elected to close. So we effectively lost 60 days of our, what you would, I guess, equal to the retail holiday shopping season. Okay. I mean, spring in Pinehurst is, you know, every day feels like Christmas. I mean, you're getting a high paying customer and they got a big discretionary spend with them. And oh, by the way, John, we were coming off a record year last year, and our pre-sales and our projection, both on the group corporate side and the leisure side, were very promising. So it, you know, 60 days of closure was hard. I mean, you go through the stages of grief, and I can't quote them right now, but I definitely experienced those. And I think we all did. And I mean, I remember, you know, having tears in my eyes one day when I was going for a jog around my country club, because we were laying off people, and it was real. However, in the midst of all that darkness, there was a light, and that was the auction. That was the auction that was the brainchild of Tom Pashley and some of our marketing team members. And boy, that was so reassuring, John, because we did something that was, you know, amidst the tears and the confusion and the anxiety, we were able to come up with something that was very creative, and it showed compassion for those that needed the most support, which was our employees. We raised $300,000 on that employee auction. It was well documented from the national media. It was picked up by a number of major outlets. And it kind of set the tone for the rest of the year. And that was, we're in this together. You know, this is going to be a long fight. But we were able to reopen the hotel in late May. And what happened next, John, was nothing short of amazing. And I'm sure I won't take your next question on that. But what we saw was really amazing from how golf bounced back from the pandemic.
Eric, with everything that's happened, and John and I and our team, we talk about this daily. From your perspective and from your team's perspective, what do you see going forward as a paradigm shift to golf because of COVID? What do you think is going to kind of scale back to pre-COVID days? And where's the jury still out?
Yeah. That's a great question. Could answer that probably five different ways, but I think golf never had to change, you know, inherently. And so it was the perfect sport for the epidemic. And so being, again, a massive golf center, it was just lucky that we were able to be positioned in such a way to capture this incredible, unexpected demand boom that, and I know we all track National Golf Foundation's data. I mean, 50 million or nearing 50 million more rounds this year than last year. That hasn't been, you know, we haven't seen that kind of a material increase since that guy named Tiger Woods showed up in 1997. So was this what it took the sport to have this resurgence? I don't know, but we are, I'll tell you this much, David, we are expecting more of the same in 2021 in terms of how we are building out our budget. We are leading with the, you know, here at Pinehurst, you know, the main buckets of customer segmentation is the leisure guest, which for us is a golfer, and the corporate guest and the family. So normally we have about 55 to 60% of our group guests that are coming to Pinehurst. Well, next year it's a flip. It's going to be 6% leisure. And until people feel comfortable jumping on international flights, David, I suspect we will continue to see domestic demand and road trips versus in-flight trips. And sometimes these trips, they're sacred, as we all know. I mean, that buddy trip, that once a year bucket list trip, we're not going to cancel that. So I've seen license plates from Illinois, New Jersey, New York, Texas, Louisiana. They're all driving here. They're driving 8, 9, 10 hours to play golf. So I do think we are in a good position as we go into next year with the game of golf. And I think people are rediscovering it in massive numbers. And some of that, David, is just a byproduct of working from home, you know, not being able to go to the office, having found time and rediscovering, oh, hey, you know, we've got a golf course that we're members at, let's go play. And so there has been a lot of silver linings for the game of golf because of the inherent nature that it offers.
And of course, Eric, building on to that, another really huge, significant thing that transpired over the summer was the big announcement between Pinehurst and USGA about the expanded partnership and the World Golf Hall of Fame. Tell me a little bit, let's share a little bit about how that came to pass and what golf travelers can look forward to.
Thanks for that question. Yeah, that was the shot in the arm that there was no equal to. Now, we had expected and planned for that announcement to emerge around March. Obviously, that did not happen. So we were not sure up until 24 hours out from the announcement that it was actually going to happen. There was that much uncertainty that could go either way. But the conversation, John, of this vision of having Golf House Pinehurst goes back 4 years ago with Bob Demin Jr., the owner of Pinehurst Resort, and Mike Davis, CEO of USGA. It was then when they first talked about the what ifs of having a permanent structure, a permanent home at Pinehurst. And so this was not something that was taken lightly. It was carefully thought through. And so by the numbers, John, I'll read you a few numbers here just to kind of put in context. The investment to construct the two new facilities is around $5 million. $80,000 is the average salary of the 50 new USGA jobs that will be created. $18 million in state grant funding incentive package. $140 million in visitor spending generated by the U.S. Opens. Oh, by the way, we have three decades of those on the books, all the way to 2047. And then finally, $800 million in total projected economic benefit to North Carolina over the next 10 years. To get a tourism-centric economic development deal done in the middle of a pandemic is nothing short of amazing. And so it's a dream come true for our area. The benefits are clear and significant and far-reaching. And here's the cool thing, John. From our standpoint, to have the USGA physically linked to us puts us on a playing field that's only similar to St. Andrews and the Lynx Trust. You know, and so we feel very honored that we had this chance to move forward and to have this union of the two brands.
Yeah, it really is nothing short of phenomenal, and it's well received. Not to be a ringer, but I can fondly think back at a lot of the research that our firm and Pinehurst partnered with over the years, and remember some work we did on packaging, and remember some broader brand perception work. But the one that really kind of stands out most is just in helping to transform the perception of the resort as one that isn't just this once in a lifetime bucket list golf trip, but looking at all that you've done over the last several years to become much more accessible to families and women and somebody who isn't necessarily coming in for just this pure golf centric trip, you know, to me is really vaulted the resort to an even more significant place. Tell me a little bit about how that evolution transpired and how you and the team kind of helped to break down those misperceptions that people had.
Sure. Well, we like to say that we're not stuck in a time capsule at Pinehurst. And to stay relevant, you have to evolve, right? And we have a lot of black and white photos through the facility at Pinehurst, the Carolina Hotel, the resort clubhouse. Well, we want color photos as well. And so how can you be intentional with the evolution and the transformation of Pinehurst? And it really all started, John, back with the restoration of course number two. We that was a bold step. And, you know, we were kind of, to quote Bob Demin, you know, we were kind of messing with the Mona Lisa. It was either going to be the smartest thing or the dumbest thing we ever did. Turns out it was a pretty smart deal. And it kind of shed light on, hey, by looking back, we're looking forward. And we took that philosophy and said, what else can we do to unleash energy at Pinehurst, to attract the younger generations? Enter Gil Hance for the cradle. You know, it's 700, you know, it's nine holes. You've got all par threes right on the main clubhouse. It's the shortest golf course we have, but it's had the most impact. From a brand messaging standpoint, wrap your head around that. That's a tricky one. I mean, it's amazing to think about the enormity of the impact it's had on people coming to Pinehurst. look at the restoration of course number four, you know, and which has just been rated top 100 by Golf Magazine. The brewery, you know, we took an old steam plant building that was defunct and it was just sitting there with kudzu grown over it. And we always thought, wait a minute, breweries are kind of cool and there's a lot going on in the space right now. We've got a captive audience. Let's bring this facility back to life in a very unique and innovative way. And then now you have the Pioneers Brewing Company. It's been incredibly successful. The Manor Inn, the smallest of the three hotel collection, 42 rooms. We designed it with the golf traveler in mind. We thought through, you know, this whole case study of what does a golfer want when they come to Pinehurst and how do we design this new hotel with that golfer in mind. And so we now have the North South Whiskey Bar that lives in conjunction with the Manor. It's just it turned out to be a beautiful renovation. So when you take a step back and you think about all these things, this collage of changes and evolution, one, you have to appreciate the Dedman family for the stewards they are, for the visionaries that he is, but also just the vision that Tom Paschke's had and the executive team to challenge the status quo and to say, we can evolve and we can be relevant today, just like we were, you know, back in 1999 when we really kind of arrived in terms of a national iconic property. So competition is pretty thick in our space. And so we have to fight for market share every single day. And to do that, you have to, you know, continue to make bold changes and to keep, you know, to stay top of mind with the golf traveler. And I think we've done a pretty good job of that. It's also been a lot of social media involved and a lot of you know, well thought out marketing strategies to go along with it.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad to see it reaping benefits on a truly unique, one-of-a-kind place in the country. Eric, I thank you so much for being with us. Wish we could chat for another 30 minutes, but we try to keep these to a limited amount of time. And hopefully we can have you back again as some of the plans continue to move forward and things come to place with Golf House being built and certainly with a number of, I'm sure, to be really historic opens to be played once again. Thank you for being on Drivers.
Happy to be here, John. Thanks for asking me.